Life is getting back to normal with the worst of the superstorms known as Sandy behind us. The State Emergency Management Agency is sending out 31 rapid assessment teams today to determine where the worst damage was done and where to concentrate assistance. And we'll be checking in with one of those teams here on the Cape in a few minutes. State employees that had yesterday off expected back at work this morning by 10. The state's trial courts are scheduled to reopen at noon. We have some schools reopening, some closed for the other day because of electricity remaining out. We still have about 19,000 people here on the Cape and the Vineyard without power. And all travelers flying out of Logan are being asked to check with their airlines. We're going to do a little assessment here of the storm and the impact. And we're going to start with Frank O'Loughlin, a meteorologist who provides forecasts for the Barnstable County Emergency Planning Committee. Good morning, Frank.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great. So at this point, we have a wind advisory in effect, but boy, this seems downright calm compared to yesterday.
Oh, that's certainly true. I mean, yesterday we were certainly forecasting some heavy winds, and we did see them. And everybody can hear them whistling around their gutters yesterday. We had several wind gusts in the hurricane force range, which is about 74 miles per hour, and many gusts frequently into the upper 60s, near 70. And it's hard to tell damage because it takes a while to look at it. I mean, when it falls in the overnight hours, it takes usually during the day. But we escaped a lot of what would have been very, very serious type surge that we saw to our west, and we're really fearful of that earlier when we were looking at the system. But and I'm sure they'll find some pockets of some small inundations and things like that, but at least we didn't have the devastating type flooding they saw to the west of us.
Exactly. Now, let's talk a little bit about this storm. This is what we call a hybrid storm. And for folks who maybe didn't hear some of that discussion yesterday, we had the hurricane coming up that met with some other fronts. Tell us about how that works.
Right. You have like a trough of low pressure, and you can imagine it comes off the coast and it digs like a wave, if you kind of see it like a wave that breaks on the ocean. And what happens is you have two different types of systems. You have the tropical system, which feeds on basically warm water for its source of energy. It doesn't have fronts, cold fronts, warm fronts. And then you have, you know, what we call an extratropical or post-tropical system, more like a nor'easter, that feeds on the contrast of air masses to fuel its rotation. So you have, you know, warm fronts, cold fronts, and in the middle you have a storm. And what happened was this system came up the coast, and the two, well, basically got together, combined into a hybrid where it still had a warm core, but it was also being energized by the tremendous energy of the trough moving offshore. Now, there was a blocking pattern in Greenland in the North Atlantic that prevented the storms. Usually, we usually see most of our storms go out to sea and miss us, but it had no place to go, and it basically forced it back toward the coast. And it's a very anomalous condition. It doesn't happen very often, probably once in a lifetime, but it just goes to show that it can happen.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Some of the meteorologists who were reporting on this were saying, you know, this hybrid sort of this situation is so unusual, it's sort of hard to forecast what will happen. But it seemed like most of the forecasts that we were hearing were pretty accurate. It pretty much did what we thought it was going to do.
Numerical modeling has come a long way in the last 20 years, particularly in the last 10 or 15 years, with the advent of more supercomputers, but also the ability of programming these in. Basically, a model is only a snapshot of the atmosphere at one given time, and then you move forward in time, and you can forecast the weather based on that initial point. And we're getting better and better and more powerful computers to be able to crunch those numbers, so we're able to forecast quite a bit. You know, you wouldn't want to say that, you know, weather people will often tell you there's no such thing as a sure thing, but it's getting better and better. If you look at the models as we closed in on the date, they began to align and get closer together. You know, 20 years ago, there would be the possibility that it would have not done anything like the model said and maybe veered out to sea or something like that if we hadn't been able to see the block pattern properly. But lately, in the last few years, when you see something and it's about 24 hours out, it's a lot closer forecast than it would have been back in the 80s and the 70s, certainly.
Yeah. And so today we've got still, I said, wind advisory. And are we have any concerns about any more flooding from high tides in some of the low-lying areas?
There is. I believe there still is an advisory out. I haven't looked in the last few minutes, but I believe there was. And we do have a little low-level jet putting a little bit of energy still across us. So what you're going to see is there's probably going to be another little round of winds. Not to be nervous, nothing like what we saw yesterday, but there'll be a few gusts around, make you kind of wonder a little bit if you hear it and see it, but certainly the damaging winds that we saw, and we had to pick up off our driveway today, pretty much that kind of intensity is over. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some splash over at the time of high tide, both in the midday cycle and as we approach midnight.
All right. Frank O'Loughlin, meteorologist who provides forecasts for the Barnstable County Emergency Planning Committee. Thanks, Frank, for giving us an update. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, up next, we're going to go to senior reporter Sean Corcoran, who's been out and about this morning checking out the damage. Morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning, Mindy.
Where are you now?
Right near the Hyannisport Yacht Club, where what appears to be some of the only property damage that we're aware of occurred, and that was the boathouse here, which is kind of iconic because this boathouse is the pier that's connected to it was where Senator Ted Kennedy would often tie up his sailboat, the Maya. Actually, one of the final photos that we have of the senator was him walking down this dock with the boathouse behind him just a few days before he died. So that went into the water sometime yesterday, late in the day yesterday, and now there's folks, lots of folks coming by to kind of check it out. A few of them getting pretty bold, going right up next to it and putting their foot on the roof, which is still visible above the water.
And beyond that, we're just seeing pretty much what some lip. I noticed on my way in this morning, still some wires down and, you know, a lot of debris kind of pushed to the sides of the road at this point.
Falmouth, I think, was one of the communities hardest hit driving through. I did notice lots of trees down there. I drove through Sandwich, Mashpee, over here in Barnstable, through Kituit, and there's some debris on the road in some places. Mostly it's been pushed to the side. Every road I encountered was passable. No barriers up anymore that I saw. Now I'm seeing lots of joggers going by, dog walkers, and people just taking a look around. I saw some folks washing off their cars, doing a little car wash this morning. One woman here in Hyannisport, I went up to talk to her to get her experience, and I told her, you know, where I was from, WCAI, and she hugged me. And she said, thank you for your coverage yesterday. And it really made me feel good. But, no, it's a pretty happy day out here, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had, as you know, we've had a couple of issues ourselves with our generator on Martha's Vineyard. So we lost 90.1 for a little bit yesterday, and I think we're still out there now. And then we have a Verizon issue over on Nantucket. So we've had some spotty coverage in some areas. But we're working on that to fix that. But, yeah, this was our first test of our new generator here in Woods Hole, and it worked perfectly.
The generator worked really well in Woods Hole, and we got to find out what happened at some of those transmitter sites.
Right, exactly.
I did hear from a neighbor in Mashpee who is still without power. I've been out on the road. I don't have the most up-to-date numbers right now. Last I heard, it was about 19,000.
Yeah, we're still there, yeah.
We're on the Cape and Islands. Yeah, but that's, you know, we were at 57,000 yesterday at the peak.
Yep.
We were down to about 40,000 overnight, and now we're at about 19,000. So it could have been worse. Hopefully they'll get those folks up pretty quickly, and we'll try to get some information on how that's working.
Right.
Not seeing a lot of crews out there right now, though, at least in my travel.
Yeah, still the wind advisory. It's still a little bit windy, but they're obviously doing something because those numbers are coming down. All right.
Yes.
Sean Corcoran, senior reporter here at WCAI. Thanks for the update.
Thanks, Mindy.
If you have something you'd like to share with us from the storm, feel free to give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@wgbh.org. Mashpee Fire Chief George Baker is the chairman of the Barnstable County Regional Emergency Planning Committee. He's been with us throughout the storm and joins us again this morning. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning. Good morning. I feel like I'm a member of the NPR crew now.
You are. You've been important in our coverage here, keeping us up to date.
Teamwork.
Yeah, exactly. So as Sean was saying, things seem to be getting back to normal. I know we chatted briefly this morning, and the shelters are going to be closing. And so to give us an update, what's happening there?
Shelters are closing as we speak. We Cape-wide, we sheltered a total of 42 people and 18 plus or minus pets. And those shelters are securing, and folks are going home. NSTAR and partners are doing a fabulous job. You know, with the interactive map now, we can see the colors change, and most communities are getting down in the, at least what I'm seeing, the less than 20% range. Mashpee is in the less than 10% range, so they're picking up those single isolated outages now and getting that stuff finalized. And, you know, we're out as a community doing damage assessments and still cleaning up some of the roadways. Mashpee DPW, as many are, have three crews out and still working on some of the main roads. So although folks are out and about and the level of safety is increasing, you know, use some caution, watch for our public works and utility crews, and give them a wide berth and slow down just a bit as you approach them.
Yeah.
But we continue to restore. I mean, this you know, a lot of folks are downplaying the significance of this storm, but, you know, we were quite busy yesterday. There was quite a few serious incidents going on. Mashpee, for one. I know other communities experienced fires related to outage issues. We had a fire. We continue to be busy now with our emergency medical component as people are getting up and out and dealing with some of their medical issues they didn't deal with yesterday. So we continue to be busy.
Yeah. And it really, when you think, it was interesting because the Outer Cape and the islands didn't seem to be as impacted as much as the Upper Cape and the South Coast here, which usually it seems to be the other way around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So we were lucky in that sense. But really, we had some pretty big wind gusts. Cutty Hunk, 83 miles. Wellfleet clocked 81. And as Frank was just telling us, we had some in the 70s around. So there was a potential for this to be a much bigger storm than it was.
Yeah. And you know, we continue to be in a wind watch and continue to watch the tide.
Yeah. And then, as Frank said, we'll probably see some more flooding in some of the low-lying areas at high tide today, but nothing like we saw yesterday. And again, as you're saying, people should just be a little bit cautious because, you know, there's still some branches and debris in the road. And when you come up on it quick, you know, you want to be able to stop before you head into that. Still
right.
Some wires down as well in some areas. I know I saw that in Falmouth at the town green. There's some wires down there on my way in this morning, and they had the road blocked there. All right.
We continue to be busy. I believe, you know, we've really got great teamwork and partnership all the way around the media, the public utilities, public safety, you know, and again, I think that makes it look like this storm was a little bit less than others. I just think we had a lot of cooperation that made it a little bit easier for folks to weather.
Exactly. Mashpee Fire Chief George Baker chairs the Barnstable County Regional Emergency Planning Committee. Thank you, Chief, and thanks for your great work. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
And we do still have a few roads under some water. In Dennisport, Old Wharf Road is underwater. In Chatham, the Fish Pier, the lower parking lot, is still submerged. And also in Chatham, Scattertree Road, half flooded. And Sandwich, we have the Sandwich Boardwalk underwater, all low-lying areas. So we kind of maybe expect a little bit of that. Now we're going to turn to Greg Berman. He's a coastal processes specialist with Hui's Sea Grant, Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, and he's on the MEMA Rapid Assessment Team. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Minnie.
Now, I know you were out yesterday kind of combing some of the beaches and seeing what was going on, and now you're out there this morning. So tell us what you were seeing yesterday and what you're seeing today.
Well, yesterday we had quite a few power outages, a lot of traffic lights being an issue, downed trees making it hard to get to some of these beach locations. The beaches themselves, when I went out yesterday morning, looked like high tide, even though we were several hours from high tide. Once high tide finally arrived, we started having overwash, which is when the waves started going over the dunes, and some areas where foot traffic had worn small holes in the dunes and coastal features.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting a little bit of water up and over through those. There was some minor coastal flooding in the low-lying areas through South Dennis, areas of Mashpee, South Cape Beach, and that sort of area.
Mm-hmm.
And then this morning, after the late night tide going out, some of those small areas like on Pompanesset Spit that were just starting to see some connection between Nantucket Sound and the bay really got blown out overnight. There's five or six breaches within that barrier beach with fairly significant overwash fans when sand actually gets pushed from the beach back over into the estuarine area. And one of those is probably just about 100 feet wide, and it's still intertidal. So probably the next high tide, it's still going to be connected.
Wow. And tell us a little about the MEMA's Rapid Assessment Team, what you're tasked with doing.
Oh, absolutely. This team is, after the storm has finished, we are going out and monitoring critical facilities, public infrastructure, and coastal storm damage. Pretty much what we've seen so far, even though we're nowhere near finished yet, is most of the inland critical facilities, the fire departments, schools, those kind of facilities, weathered the storm pretty well.
Mm.
There's some downed trees nearby, but pretty much all the public facilities did pretty well. Some of the roads and parking lots did get undermined where they were right next to the beach. South Cape Beach in Mashpee, actually, we have reports that they lost over 15 feet of that parking lot.
Wow. All right. Well, we're going to let you continue with your assessments, Greg, and maybe we'll check in with you at a later date and find out the full picture. Greg Berman, Coastal Processes Specialist with Hui Sea Grant, Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, and on the MEMA Rapid Assessment Team. Thanks so much.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Well, a debate scheduled for tonight between Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren is not happening. A Brown spokesman said the Republican incumbent decided not to participate in the debate out of concern for the hardship faced by people in the path of Hurricane Sandy. The campaign and Brown felt it was not appropriate to go forward with a political debate when the disaster strikes. Elizabeth Warren's campaign released a statement right after that concurring that Hurricane Sandy took precedence. The latest poll shows the candidates in a statistical tie. We're going to check in on the campaigns. First up, Philip Martin covering the Brown campaign.
In the spring of 2011, the notion of any Democrat taking back Scott Brown's Senate seat seemed unlikely. Statewide, his approval rating was at 73%, and in potential and actual matchups with Democrats, he led by double digits.
The 2012 Massachusetts Senate race has been taking shape for months. Several Democrats have announced bids.
But what are their chances of unseating
Republicans? Privately and even openly, as you'll hear, there are those Democrats who have serious concerns.
One Massachusetts congressman, also a Democrat, who ran for the seat in 2010, is not optimistic.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Brown is a genuine celebrity. On the campaign trail, he's mobbed by well-wishers, and almost all of them want to take a picture with the former model and magazine centerfold. Independent voter Lewis Cook, the kind of voter that Brown needs to win, greeted the senator at a restaurant in Watertown.
He's the best thing that could happen to us, and I hope he runs for president someday.
So to beat Brown, Democrats concluded that they needed a star of their own.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to run for the United States Senate.
But as consumer advocate Elizabeth Warren's campaign rolled out, pundits suggested that the race was still Brown's to lose by virtue of the polls. How did he get to that vaunted point in his political career? In the winter of 2010, then state senator Scott Brown wrote a tsunami of Tea Party anger to an upset victory over Attorney General Martha Coakley.
We basically got him elected to oppose Obamacare, the health care reform bill.
Christine Marabito is president of the Greater Boston Tea Party.
He was never as ideologically conservative as the Tea Party.
That reputation for independence proved popular with crossover voters like Helen Trusk out of Brookline.
Well, I like the way he's very bipartisan. He works both sides.
Brown also votes on both sides, co-sponsoring a GOP amendment that would allow employers to deny coverage for contraception on religious grounds, while also opposing an effort to cut off federal funding for Planned Parenthood. Brown has also pledged to scuttle President Obama's signature health care law, a position that fueled Warren's rise in the polls. In April, as her numbers rose, the Boston Herald questioned whether she had used her avowed Native American heritage to gain advantage in the academic job market. Brown seized on the issue, which he saw as a potent weapon against his Democratic opponent.
She checked the box claiming she was a Native American, and, clearly she's not.
Brown hammered Warren on this issue and succeeded in raising questions about her character, but at the expense of his own likability. And in September, the issue backfired completely, as evidenced by the fallout from the Tomahawk campaign rally at South Station.
What I didn't understand is the disrespect.
Joanne Dunn of the Indian Center of Boston had criticized Warren's handling of the Native American controversy, but she was downright irate over the actions of Brown staff members, even though Senator Brown himself had apologized.
This might have resonated a little bit had Scott Brown fired every single person that was out there protesting and making war cries.
In September, Brown pivoted to a new line of attack.
Elizabeth Warren was a key lawyer in an asbestos case working for big corporations. Warren helped Travelers Insurance restrict payments to victims of asbestos poisoning. The results were disastrous for victims. The insurance company saved millions.
The Boston Globe found that charge, quote, misleading, as Brown failed to point out that Warren expected Travelers to pay out a settlement of $500 million to asbestos workers. Brown's straight shooter reputation was further eroded by a false claim that Warren used actors in an ad rebuking the asbestos allegation.
Cut that for you from that.
Politico experts believe that Brown has about a 50-50 chance of keeping his seat, and he's running like someone who knows it.
We're working hard, man. I'm doing my best. Watch your step here.
I've never been a big poll guy. Had I worried about polls, I never would have gotten out of bed when I was down 41.
Over the summer in Tampa, Brown met with GOP political strategist Karl Rove in what he called a chance encounter. Brown is looking for support wherever he can find it in the hope, again, of shocking the nation, as he did in 2010.
This is Sarah Birnbaum covering the Warren campaign. It was the day before Elizabeth Warren was going to deliver a primetime speech at the Democratic National Convention. She was going to make her case on national television in front of thousands of voters. It was a major get for the campaign. But behind the scenes, things weren't so rosy. Former Governor Mike Dukakis called out the campaign publicly and said her advertisements needed to shape up. Democratic bigwigs were grumbling throughout the summer that her ads were giving off an unappealing image, a preachy and stilted vibe.
Our kids owe $1 trillion in student loan debt. That's more than all the credit card debt in America combined.
At the end of August, it seemed that Warren's opponent, Scott Brown, was in control of the messaging. His ads were better, according to most political observers. They were more creative and more personal. They showed him driving in his truck, talking about life. They showcased his family and reminded people of his struggles growing up. And then in public appearances, press releases, and on conservative talk radio, the Brown people were hammering Warren nonstop on her claims of Native American heritage. Warren was slow in responding to the attacks. She made matters worse when she said she was part Cherokee, but had no proof of her Native American roots other than family lore and high cheekbones. At this press conference in May, she talks about a picture she had on her mantle growing up.
My Aunt B has walked by that picture at least 1,000 times, remarked that her father, my papa, had high cheekbones, like all of the Indians do, because that's how she saw it. And she said, and your mother got those same great cheekbones, and I didn't. She thought this was the bad deal she had gotten in life.
The Native American issue was all over the national media. She couldn't seem to put it behind her. And then there was the problem of the ground game. Congressman Jim McGovern of Worcester says volunteers were ready to canvass and get involved, but they weren't being mobilized.
You know, a few months ago, as this campaign was being kind of put together, there were a lot of people who, you know, wanted to be plugged in immediately. And, you know, and it took a while to kind of get everything, in place.
But then around the middle of September, just after the Democratic National Convention, the momentum seemed to shift. On September 13th, Warren unveiled a new media strategy. She started going after Scott Brown directly in her commercials. Also, she didn't appear in the ads. Instead, they rely on voices of voters from different walks of life. This ad features gym owner Art Romalo, who helped train Lowell native boxer Mickey Ward.
We can spot the real fighters here in this gym, and Elizabeth Warren is a real fighter.
Just like a swing of the
base. I don't know about Scott Brown. He's been siding with the big money guys.
Then, on September 21st, the candidates held their first televised debate. Brown attacked Warren right away on the Native American issue, but she was ready. She gave a cohesive, definitive answer.
When I was growing up, these are the stories I knew about my heritage. I believed my mother and my father and my aunts and my uncles, and I never asked anybody for any documentation. I don't know any kid who did. But, you know, I never used it. Never used it for getting into college. Never used it for getting into law school.
Warren proceeded to turn in 3 solid debate performances, giving voters a chance to get to know her. Meanwhile, Congressman McGovern says her Get Out the Vote campaign kicked into high gear.
Well, I can tell you with certainty that now every single volunteer is being utilized. And as you know, as this campaign has gone on, it is only getting better. And that's true for the field operation.
According to a campaign spokesperson, Warren has 47 field offices throughout the state and 80,000 volunteer signups in Massachusetts. And political analyst Jeff Berry says Warren has another thing in her favor. That's the makeup of the Massachusetts electorate.
The state overwhelmingly favors Democrats. 36% of the state are registered Democrats and only 11% are registered Republicans. So it's a lot easier to reach 50% if you're starting at 36% than it is if you're starting at 11%.
Berry says Elizabeth Warren could afford to make mistakes early on because in the end, the math is on her side.
Now, Sarah Burbaum and Philip Martin covering the Brown and Warren campaigns. Again, the debate between the two candidates that was scheduled for tonight has been canceled. Just update again on our storm situation. We have about 19,000 or so NSTAR customers still without power on the Cape and the Vineyard. Very few outages were reported on Nantucket, just a handful. State Emergency Management Agency has 31 rapid assessment teams out today to determine where the worst damage was done and where to concentrate assistance. Again, our forecast today, we have a wind advisory. We may see a little bit more coastal flooding in some of the low-lying areas with today's high tides. But as we heard earlier in the program, nothing like we saw yesterday. On a final note, checked in with Vern Locks this morning. Vern, as you may recall, yesterday was very excited about the winds because it generally brings in some exotic birds from other places. And Vern was out yesterday and this morning and was very disappointed to report he didn't see the birds he was expecting. Not only did he not see them on Nantucket, he said the birders on the Cape were also reporting nothing too exciting there. So that wraps up our coverage for Storm Sandy. I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point WCAI. The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Dan Treidel and Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR station, a service of WGBH.